Hey everyone, welcome back. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're tackling monopolies.
Oh, yeah, classic.
Right. And to guide us, we've got chapter 15 from this, well, frankly, pretty cool economics textbook.
This sounds like a dense read.
It is, but don't worry, we'll break it down. This chapter is perfect if you've ever wondered how those mega corporations, the ones everyone's always talking about, actually work.
The ones that seem like they're everywhere you turn.
Exactly. So buckle up because we're going to uncover some seriously interesting stuff.
Monopolies, huh? What fascinates me is how often they're misunderstood. People just throw that label around for any big company.
Right. Like just because a company is huge doesn't automatically make it a monopoly, does it?
Nope, not at all. There's a lot more to it.
So let's get this straight. What exactly makes a company a true monopoly? Not just a big player, but like the real deal.
A true monopoly isn't about size, it's about being the only provider of a product or service, something with no close substitutes.
Okay, so like imagine.
Imagine, say, you're on a road trip,
Ooh, I love road trips.
driving through a desert, miles of nothing, and you finally come across a gas station.
The only one for miles.
Exactly. That's your classic, simple illustration of a monopoly.
Okay, I get the gas station analogy, but real-world monopolies are probably way more complex.
Oh, absolutely. But let's stick with that gas station for a second. That loan station, why is it the only one? Maybe because it controls the only land for miles around. No one else can set up shop.
Makes sense. So this brings us to one of the main causes of monopolies then, right? Control of a vital resource.
Bingo. You hit it.
I'm learning.
Like, think about De Beers, the diamond company. Historically, they've controlled a huge chunk of the world's diamond mines.
Diamonds. Oh, so they pretty much had a monopoly on bling.
You could say that. That near monopoly over diamonds gave them incredible power over global diamond prices.
Wow, talk about sparkling profits. It makes you wonder how their control impacted the whole diamond market.
It raises a lot of interesting questions. Now, get ready for a curveball. Sometimes the government actually creates monopolies.
Wait, what? Seriously, I thought the government was supposed to prevent monopolies, not make them.
I know, right? It seems counterintuitive, but there are situations where the government grants temporary monopolies to encourage, believe it or not, innovation.
Okay, now I'm really confused. How does that work?
Think about patents and copyrights. These legal protections give inventors and creators exclusive rights to their work.
So no one else could just copy their invention or their song or whatever.
Exactly. It's a limited time monopoly to encourage companies to invest in research and development. They know they'll have a window to profit from their discoveries.
Ah, okay, so that explains why brand new medications are so expensive.
Exactly. The pharmaceutical company has a patent, which is essentially a temporary monopoly.
Giving them the power to set prices high.
Right. It's a delicate balance, though. On one hand, patents and copyrights lead to higher prices for a while, but on the other, they encourage innovation.
So we pay more now for the chance of groundbreaking discoveries later.
It's a classic trade-off. Tough to swallow when you're the one paying those high prices, though.
Totally. Okay, so we've got monopolies that happen naturally and monopolies created by the government. What other kinds are there?
Well, let's dive into another type. Natural monopolies.
Ooh, more nature metaphors.
These are situations where it's just more efficient to have one company providing a service, usually because the initial costs are astronomical.
Okay, give me an example.
Well, imagine a company trying to build a second water pipe network under your entire city.
Oh my goodness, the construction alone would be a nightmare.
Not to mention insanely expensive, it wouldn't make much sense,
My
right?
water bill is high enough already.
Exactly. That's the logic behind natural monopolies.
So things like power grids too, right?
Yes, setting up an entire electricity infrastructure is a massive undertaking. It's often more practical, more efficient to have one company manage it.
And just have the government regulate them to make sure they don't abuse their power.
You got it.
Okay, so monopolies aren't always some evil corporation trying to crush the competition.
Definitely not.
Sometimes they're just the most practical solution, right?
Exactly. But let's be real, monopolies often get a bad rap for a reason, one major one. Their ability to set prices.
Ah, here's where things get juicy.
Unlike businesses in competitive markets, monopolies can charge prices higher than their costs, leading to, you guessed it, bigger profits.
Okay, I've always wondered about this. Why does software like Microsoft Windows cost so much when you can just download it in seconds? The actual cost of producing another copy must be next to nothing.
You're exactly right. The cost of producing another copy of Windows is tiny, but the price tag. significantly higher.
Just because they can.
That's the price-setting power of a monopoly.
Feels a bit unfair, doesn't it? Like they're taking advantage of their position.
That's a valid point. It leads us to a concept economists call deadweight loss.
Deadweight loss. Sounds ominous.
It's basically a way to measure the missed opportunities for both buyers and sellers when a monopoly restricts output to inflate prices.
Okay, I need you to break that down for me.
Yeah.
Deadweight loss. What does that actually mean?
All right, picture this. Your favorite bakery makes amazing cupcakes.
Oh, I love cupcakes.
But they always close early, even with tons of cupcakes left over. There are people who would happily buy those cupcakes.
But they can't because the bakery's closed.
You got it. Both the bakery and the potential customers miss out.
That's a perfect example. I get it. A limited supply, even if it's artificial, can lead to missed opportunities for everyone.
Exactly. That's the essence of deadweight loss. It's a reduction in overall economic well-being.
Because the monopoly is holding back, even though people want more.
Exactly. They restrict output, keep prices high, and everyone loses out on potential gains. But wait, there's another twist to this whole monopoly story.
Oh, wait. There's more. Hit me with it.
Sometimes monopolies don't charge everyone the same price. They engage in something called price discrimination.
Price discrimination. That sounds, well, a little shady. Are they playing favorites or something?
It might sound that way, but it's more common than you think. And it isn't always a bad thing.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. Tell me more about this price discrimination thing.
Let's go back to our trusty textbook. It gives the example of a book publisher.
Okay.
They can actually make more money and sell more books overall by charging different prices.
Wait a minute. Is this why I always waited for the paperback edition of a book to come out?
You're catching on.
The hardcover comes out first at a premium price, right? For those who just have to have it right away.
Yeah.
Then later they release a cheaper paperback.
Exactly. They segment the market, charging what each group is willing to pay.
Clever, but sneaky. And it's not just books, is it? Think about movie tickets. They're cheaper for kids and seniors.
You got it. Or airline prices. Remember that thing about staying over a Saturday night to get a lower fare?
Oh, yeah. Airlines are notorious for that. They know business travelers often need to be back home before the weekend and are willing to pay a premium.
So in a way, they're price discriminating against those business travelers.
And rewarding us leisure travelers, right?
You could see it that way. It makes flying more accessible to folks who might not be able to afford those higher fares.
Okay, that's a good point. Like a two-sided coin, this price discrimination thing. What about those discount coupons?
Yeah, good one.
Are we as consumers discriminating against ourselves by using them?
Interesting question. On the surface, we think we're getting a deal. But companies use those coupons strategically, knowing that certain types of shoppers will use them.
So it's like they're offering lower prices to the bargain hunters while still getting full price from those who aren't as price sensitive.
It's all very calculated.
Wow, the strategy behind pricing is mind-blowing. Okay, so we've unpacked how monopolies work, but what can be done about them, you know, when they become harmful?
Right, good question. Well, governments have a few options.
Lay it on me. What can we do?
One option is antitrust laws. These are designed to break up existing monopolies or prevent mergers that would squash competition.
So it's like stepping in and saying, hey, you're getting too big. Time to share the sandbox.
Exactly. And a recent Supreme Court case about printer cartridges highlights this perfectly.
Wait, really? Printer cartridges?
Yep. The outcome of that case could actually impact things like pharmaceutical pricing down the road.
Ooh, legal battles over ink. I never would have guessed it was so important. What if breaking up a monopoly isn't possible, though? What then?
That's when regulation comes in. For natural monopolies like utilities, breaking them up just wouldn't be practical.
Right, makes sense.
Instead, the government can set prices to make sure those companies aren't overcharging.
Keeping essential services affordable.
That's the idea.
But hold on, couldn't the government just run the monopoly itself?
Interesting thought. That's the option of public ownership. The government could nationalize a monopoly.
Cut out the middleman.
Right. But there's a potential downside.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for fairness, but I wouldn't want to see my bills go up because of government mismanagement.
You've hit a key concern. Private companies, they're driven by profit, so they have a strong incentive to operate efficiently.
Keep costs down or go out of business.
Right. That pressure might not be there with a government-run monopoly.
So it's that classic debate. Private versus public ownership. Tough choices. Okay, so we can break them up, regulate them, or run them ourselves.
Yeah.
Is that it? Are those our only choices?
Well, there is actually a fourth option. doing nothing.
Wait, seriously? Okay. Just let the monopoly do whatever it wants.
Sometimes government intervention can actually make things worse, even with the best intentions.
Like the cure is worse than the disease.
You could say that. Economist George Stigler called this political failure, where government intervention backfires.
Political failure versus market failure. Heavy stuff.
It's a complex issue with no easy answers.
That's for sure. So determining how much the government should intervene with a monopoly is a tough call.
It is a balancing act, that's for sure.
Well, I've got to say, this deep dive has been incredibly insightful.
Glad to hear it.
I'm starting to see monopolies in a whole new light. They're way more nuanced than I thought.
That's the key takeaway. Monopolies are a fundamental part of our economy, with both pros and cons.
And understanding all this complexity helps us navigate the world around us, right?
Exactly.
I feel like I've already learned so much and we've only just scratched the surface. So where do we go from here in our deep dive into monopolies?
Well, next, we'll move beyond the textbook and look at real-world examples how monopolies play out in our daily lives.
Okay, I'm ready. Get ready for some eye-opening discoveries.
You got it.
All right, detective hats on. We've covered the basics of monopolies, but how do we spot them in the real world? I'm ready to put my newfound knowledge to the test.
Well, remember those two key elements from our textbook definition: being the sole seller and offering something with no close substitutes. That's our starting point.
So it's not just about finding big companies, right? We're looking for companies that have a real stranglehold on a specific market.
Exactly. They offer something unique, something you can't get anywhere else.
Got it. But I imagine there are degrees of this, right? It's not always so black and white.
You're right. It's not always so clear cut. There are degrees of monopoly power. Even a small business, say the only bakery in a tiny town, they have a kind of mini monopoly, right?
Okay. So it's a sliding scale. The more unique the product and the fewer competitors, the more monopoly power they have. It's interesting to think about how this plays out in everyday life.
Absolutely. And don't forget that power isn't always a bad thing. Remember those temporary monopolies created by patents and copyrights?
Right, right. Like we talked about earlier, that kind of market dominance can actually be necessary to fuel innovation.
Exactly. It gives companies the incentive to invest in research and development,
leading to those big breakthroughs we all benefit from. Okay, so we've talked about the good side, but let's flip the script and talk about when this power becomes excessive. We touched on dead weight loss earlier, but there's another concept I found intriguing. Rent seeking. What exactly does that mean?
Rent, in this context, refers to any payment that's above and beyond what's really economically necessary. So rent seeking is basically when companies try to increase their profits without actually creating any new value.
Okay, I see where this is going. Monopolies are already charging higher prices because of their position, right? So what kind of sneaky rent-seeking stuff might they get up to?
Think about it. They might use their influence to lobby for special regulations that benefit them, or they might try to snag tax breaks that their competitors don't get.
So instead of focusing on making better products or being more efficient, they're pouring resources into rigging the system in their favor.
You got it. It's not about fair competition anymore. It's about protecting their dominance,
which can ultimately stifle innovation, right? And hurt consumers in the long run.
Exactly. Unchecked monopoly power can really warp the incentives. Instead of striving to be the best, they become complacent.
It's a vicious cycle. The more dominant they become, the more they can manipulate the system to stay on top. Fewer choices for consumers, higher prices, less innovation. It's a bit scary when you think about it.
It is, right? Which is why it's crucial to understand the economics of all this. We need to be aware of how unchecked market power can affect us.
Right. Knowledge is power. Okay, so our textbook uses Microsoft Windows as its main example of a monopoly. But what other monopolies or near monopolies do we encounter regularly?
Well, think about your internet service provider. In a lot of places, you only have one or two options, right?
Don't get me started. I feel like I've spent hours on the phone trying to haggle with my cable company. They know I don't have many other choices.
Exactly. Limited choice gives them leverage.
Yeah, so frustrating.
Yeah.
What else? What other industries have this dynamic?
Well, social media is a big one. There are different platforms, sure, but they each dominate a specific space that gives them a lot of control over information and online advertising.
It's like each platform has its own little kingdom. Its own rules, its own culture. They set the narrative, and we're all just playing along.
It's a good analogy. And let's not forget e-commerce. Online retailers like Amazon, while brick-and-mortar stores still exist, while Amazon has a huge chunk of the market.
It's crazy how much shopping has shifted online. I remember when buying something online felt like a novelty. Now it's my default.
And that shift has raised some serious concerns. This concentration of power in the hands of a few tech giants is definitely something to keep an eye on.
It feels like we're in uncharted territory with all this digital stuff. We're still figuring out the rules of the game. Which brings me back to antitrust laws. Are they even effective at curbing the power of these huge companies?
That's the million-dollar question.
I mean, we have these laws in place, but are they actually working?
They can be powerful tools, for sure, but they have their limitations.
Okay, so let's get specific. What are some of the challenges of using antitrust laws?
Well, one big challenge is proving that a company has actually engaged in anti-competitive behavior. Just being big and successful isn't enough.
So it's not about size, it's about behavior.
Exactly. Antitrust regulators have to show that a company has specifically used its power to hurt consumers or squash competition.
Okay, but how do you prove that a company is intentionally trying to crush its rivals? That seems really hard to do.
It can be a tricky thing to prove. Antitrust cases often rely on complex economic analysis and legal arguments.
So it's not always a slam dunk?
Nope. And then there's the fact that technology is constantly evolving. It's hard for regulators to keep up with the rapid pace of change.
It's like a game of cat and mouse, right? Mm-hmm. Companies trying to stay one step ahead of the regulators.
That's a great way to put it. And don't forget the political dimension. Powerful companies often have powerful friends in government.
Ah, so lobbying and political influence can make enforcing those antitrust laws even harder.
Definitely adds another layer of complexity.
Okay, but what about those cases where it's really obvious a company has a blatant monopoly, they're abusing their power, and people are getting hurt? Have there been any success stories of breaking up those monopolies? Restoring competition, like, did it ever actually work?
Oh, definitely. One of the most famous examples is the breakup of Standard Oil back in 1911.
Standard Oil. That name rings a bell, but refresh my memory.
John D. Rockefeller's company. Back then, they had a near total grip on the oil refining industry in the U.S.
So they were like the Amazon of their day, but for oil.
You could say that. They used their power to push out competitors, manipulate prices, the whole nine yards. It was a big deal.
So what happened?
Well, the Supreme Court finally ruled that Standard Oil was an illegal monopoly. They ordered it to be broken up into smaller companies.
Wow, that's a big deal. A real David versus Goliath victory. Yeah. But did it actually work? Did breaking them up really increase competition and lower prices?
Well, it's debated among historians and economists, but a lot of people argue that it did, at least for a while. There was more competition and innovation in the oil industry after that.
So it is possible to take on those giants and win. That's good to know. But what about those natural monopolies, things like utilities? We talked about how breaking them up wouldn't really make sense.
Right. For natural monopolies, regulation tends to be the way to go. Instead of breaking them up, the government sets rules and standards to prevent those companies from exploiting their customers.
Makes sense. It's about finding that balance again, right?
Right.
Protecting consumers while allowing essential services to operate efficiently. It's complicated.
It is. Monopolies are a complex issue.
I'm telling you, this deep dive has been a real eye-opener. I'm starting to see potential monopolies everywhere I look.
That's a good thing. The more aware we are, the better.
Right. It's a reminder to be a more conscious consumer, to ask questions, not just accept the status quo.
Exactly. Think critically about the companies you're supporting. Understand the power dynamics at play.
Okay, good advice. But before we grab our pitchforks and go after every big company, let's consider another perspective. Remember what we talked about with economist George Stigler?
Yes. His warnings about political failure.
Right. Sometimes government intervention, even if it's meant to help, can backfire. So what's the alternative? Do we just let the free market sort everything out and hope for the best?
While some people believe that competition will eventually take care of even the most entrenched monopolies.
What if it doesn't? What if a company becomes so massive, so powerful, that it's unstoppable? That's a scary thought.
It's a valid concern. It highlights the need to be vigilant and to find a nuanced approach to regulation.
It's a constant balancing act, the free market versus government intervention, finding that sweet spot where things work best for everyone.
You've got it. That tension, that back and forth, is at the core of a lot of economic debates.
And these aren't just abstract debates, are they? They affect the whole economy.
Exactly. They shape the kind of society we live in.
This has been more than just an economics lesson. It's about understanding the role we want corporations to play in our lives.
Well said. And these economic concepts, They have real-world consequences for all of us.
Understanding them helps us make informed choices as consumers, as citizens, as participants in this global economy.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay, so we've explored the theory, we've looked at real-world examples, we've even talked about potential solutions. What's next? Where do we go from here in our exploration of monopolies?
Let's shift gears and delve into the ethical dimensions of all this. It's not just about economic efficiency, it's about fairness, opportunity, the distribution of power in society.
Ooh, okay. Ethics class is in session. What are the big ethical questions when we're talking about companies with so much market power?
One fundamental question is how much concentration of economic power is too much? At what point does a company's dominance become harmful to society as a whole?
Right. Like that old saying, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But how do we even define those boundaries? Where is the line between a successful company and a threat to a fair marketplace?
That's the tough question. Some argue that any degree of monopoly power is unjust because it allows a small group to have a disproportionate influence.
It's about more than just prices, isn't it? It's about who controls resources, information, even opportunities. That's kind of a sobering thought. But isn't some level of market power just inevitable?
Some people think so. They take a more pragmatic view. They argue that some degree of market power is a natural outcome of competition and that the focus should be on managing the potential downsides.
So finding that balance again, between efficiency and fairness. How do we do that?
That's where things get tricky. It comes down to ethical frameworks and societal values. We need to have honest conversations about the kind of economy we want, the role we want businesses to play, what are our priorities, what trade-offs are we willing to make.
It's a bigger discussion than just economics, isn't it? It's about philosophy, politics, morality.
Exactly. And then there's the global dimension. As markets become increasingly interconnected, the ethical challenges of monopolies get even more complicated.
It's not just about national economies anymore. It's about the power of multinational corporations, their impact on different cultures and societies.
You're right. And that raises a whole new set of ethical dilemmas. How do we make sure companies operating in developing countries respect labor rights, environmental standards? How do we prevent exploitation?
It's about finding a way to balance economic growth with social justice on a global scale.
It's a massive challenge. These aren't easy questions to answer.
This deep dive has been quite the journey, from economic theory to the ethical implications of monopolies. It's been eye-opening, for sure.
I'm glad to hear that.
So what are some key things to remember? What should our listeners be thinking about as they navigate all this?
Well, first, remember that monopolies can pop up anywhere, even in markets that seem competitive. Pay attention to the choices you have as a consumer.
So be a conscious consumer, right?
Yes. And think about the power these companies hold in different sectors.
Okay, ask questions. Don't just accept things at face value.
Exactly. Second, remember that monopolies aren't always a bad thing. Sometimes they can be necessary, even beneficial, like natural monopolies or those created by patents.
Right. It's about finding the balance between promoting innovation and protecting consumers.
Precisely. Third, don't underestimate the power of collective action. As consumers, we have a voice. We can use it to demand fair prices, ethical behavior, a more competitive market.
So it's about using our wallets and our voices to hold companies accountable.
You got it. And finally, remember that this is an ongoing conversation. There's always more to learn. Stay curious, stay informed, keep asking those questions.
Great advice. I'm feeling much more empowered now. Like I can actually make a difference.
That's what we want to hear.
Well, this deep dive has given me a lot to think about. It's clear that monopolies are about much more than just dollars and cents. They're about the kind of world we want to live in, the values we want to uphold.
That's such an important point. These economic concepts have real-world impacts on us all.
So where do we go from here? We've explored the theory, the real-world examples, talked about solutions, even the ethical dilemmas. What's the next step in our deep dive into monopolies?
Let's turn our attention to the future. How might monopolies evolve in this digital age? Technology is changing everything so rapidly. The challenges and opportunities are only going to become more complex.
Ooh, a glimpse into the future. I'm ready. What are some of the big trends and challenges we might see in the world of monopolies in the years to come?
Well, one major trend is data. It's become a source of economic power. Companies like Google, Facebook, Amazon, they control vast amounts of data. That gives them a huge advantage.
Data is the new oil, huh? The fuel of the digital economy. And just like with oil, the control of data can create monopolies, raises concerns about fairness and competition.
That's a great analogy, and it's a valid concern. How do we prevent these data giants from becoming the new Standard Oils of the digital age?
That's the big question, isn't it? So how do we tackle that? How do we prevent these data monopolies from becoming too powerful?
Well, one idea is data portability, giving people more control over their own data, making it easier to switch between services.
So empowering users, creating a more level playing field. I like it. But what about the privacy issues? Are we trading our privacy for convenience?
That's a crucial question. There are definitely trade-offs to consider. We need open discussions about the balance between innovation and privacy.
It's a question we all need to think about. What are we willing to give up in the name of progress? What kind of digital world do we want to live in?
Exactly. And let's not forget about artificial intelligence, or AI. It has the potential to be incredibly disruptive.
AI is like the ultimate wild card. How might AI contribute to monopolies? It's exciting, but also kind of scary.
Imagine a scenario where one company develops a super intelligent AI, one that can outperform humans at almost every task.
Okay, now we're getting into science fiction territory. But seriously, could that actually happen? Could AI become that powerful?
Well, we're not there yet. But some experts think that artificial general intelligence, or AGI, is a real possibility, maybe not too far off in the future.
So if one company figured out AGI, they could theoretically dominate entire industries, maybe even the whole economy. That's a mind-blowing thought.
It is. The potential benefits of AI are immense, but so are the risks.
We need to be smart about how we develop and use AI.
Absolutely. We need to be proactive. Think about how to harness AI's power while mitigating the risks, preventing monopolies, avoiding unintended consequences.
It's like we're at a fork in the road, and the choices we make now will determine the future of our economy, of society. The stakes are high.
You said it. And it's not just about the technology itself. It's about our values, our ethics, the kind of world we want to build. We need to have thoughtful conversations, develop strategies to ensure that everyone benefits from this digital revolution, not just a few powerful companies.
This deep dive has been, well, it's been a lot, more than an economics lesson. It's about the future of our world, the choices we face as a society.
It's complex and fascinating, right?
Absolutely. I'm feeling inspired to learn more, to stay engaged, to do my part. What other resources or perspectives might our listeners want to check out?
Well, one great resource is the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, or ILSR. They advocate for policies that support local businesses and challenge corporate monopolies.
So finding alternatives to those big box stores, the online giants, supporting local communities, building a more diverse economy.
Exactly. And another interesting perspective is the open source software movement.
Open source software. Remind me what that is again.
Software that anyone can use and modify for free. It's a really interesting model.
I remember now. So it's a different way of thinking about software development.
It is. The open source movement is based on the idea of sharing knowledge and innovation freely. It's a more collaborative approach.
It's a nice contrast to the whole proprietary software model, where one company controls everything.
Right. It's like a breath of fresh air, and it shows us that different models are possible.
Okay, so it's a call to action for all of us to be more than just passive consumers. We can be active participants in shaping the economic landscape.
I love that. And it all starts with awareness, education, engagement.
The more we know, the better choices we can make.
Exactly, both individually and as a society.
Well, this has been quite the deep dive. It's clear that this conversation about monopolies, it's just the beginning.
It is. And the more we learn, the more we realize how much more there is to discover.
I'm definitely feeling inspired to keep learning and to use my voice to make a difference.
That's fantastic to hear. Remember, knowledge is power. And by sharing what we've learned, we can empower others too.
So true. I'm ready to hear more about the role of consumer activism in all this. How can we as consumers really challenge monopolies and make a difference?
Let's dive into that in the final part of our deep dive.
Okay, so let's talk fighting back. You mentioned consumer activism earlier. I'm all ears. How can we, as everyday consumers, actually make a difference when it comes to these big, powerful monopolies?
That's a great question. And, you know, throughout history, consumers have played a crucial role in pushing back against corporate power, demanding fairness.
Right, making their voices heard.
Exactly. And in the digital age, consumer activism is evolving. We've got online petitions, boycotts, social media campaigns.
It's like a digital David versus Goliath, right? Using the power of the internet to level the playing field. But how do we actually do that? What are some concrete actions we can take?
Well, it starts with awareness. Take a minute to really think about the products and services you use every single day. How many of those are provided by companies with a lot of market power?
Whoa, okay. Yeah, when you put it that way, it's a bit overwhelming. My phone, my computer, my internet service, the grocery store. I mean, it's all dominated by a handful of huge corporations.
It can definitely feel daunting. But remember, even small changes can have an impact. Maybe start buying your produce from a local farmer's market instead of that mega supermarket chain.
Okay, so supporting smaller businesses.
Right. Or maybe you try out a different search engine, one that prioritizes user privacy.
So it's about diversifying our choices,
yeah,
even in small ways.
Exactly. And remember, every dollar you spend is a vote.
I like that. Voting with our wallets.
Right. When you support businesses that treat their customers fairly, you're sending a signal. You're saying you value ethical practices.
Okay, so our individual choices matter.
They do. And they can create a ripple effect, encouraging others to do the same. It can contribute to a bigger shift in consumer behavior.
Toward a more balanced marketplace.
Yeah.
What about collective action? We can't forget about that, right?
Absolutely. Collective action is crucial. When consumers join forces, they can really amplify their voices and push for change.
That's where those consumer advocacy groups come in, or those online activism campaigns we were talking about.
Exactly. There's strength in numbers. By working together, we can demand better from these powerful corporations.
Okay, this is inspiring. It's not just about government regulation or legal battles, is it?
It's not. It's about individuals taking action, making informed choices, using their voices.
So challenging monopolies is a fight we can all be part of.
Exactly. It's a multifaceted approach. And remember, this isn't a one-time battle. It's an ongoing process.
Right. As technology keeps changing, new challenges will pop up.
We need to stay engaged, informed, and adaptable.
Wow. This has been eye-opening. I'm feeling much more aware of how these monopolies work. And honestly, I feel inspired to do something about it.
That's great to hear. Even small actions can contribute to a larger movement.
We can all be part of shaping a more equitable economic future.
Well said.
Okay, so to wrap things up, thanks to everyone for joining us for this deep dive into the complex world of monopolies.
It's been a pleasure exploring these ideas with you.
We've covered a lot of ground, from the basic economics to the real-world impact, the ethics, and even potential solutions.
It's a lot to think about.
It is. But the biggest takeaway for me is that we all have the power to make a difference. We don't have to just accept the status quo.
Couldn't agree more.
So until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, keep pushing for a better world.